Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Later in the program, we'll talk with Dr. Natalie Marks about the dog flu, canine influenza virus. And also, Mindy Dutka is a photographer based in Boston, and she's taking pictures, she says, of pets and their people during the pandemic, just as she did before. But she said there was a difference during the pandemic, and she'll talk about what that difference was. So like so many people, I remember 9/11 vividly. I think you probably all do remember exactly what you were doing. I was typing a story about something, and Matt Lauer was then on the Today Show, and I hear him talking about a plane going into the World Trade Center. And at that point, no one thought terrorist attack. But I'm turning around in my chair to now pay attention to the TV and see the drama unfold, and called my wife after the second plane hit, and what was happening was more clear, and said, please come home, because she was working in a high-rise downtown at that point, and we didn't know, were all high-rises going to be hit? I mean, what was going on? We had no idea. And at that point that I called her, I could hear in the background, they were making an announcement where she works, saying, go home. So she did. She took the L home, the red line. I went to meet her at the red line, and boy, I was nervous just walking to the red line. I took our then two dogs with us, and we're walking over there. I was nervous in part because I saw these airplanes flying overhead, and I thought, weren't they supposed to be grounded? But of course, there were planes in the air still. And we live on a flight path, not close to O'Hare necessarily. We're more along the lake, but still it's a flight path. And I was worried about each and every plane I saw go overhead. Imagine being terrified like that. We were at the time. And we walk back home from the train. We sit down and we're glued to the television. And there were people she knew, my wife knew, in that building. And she's trying to check up on those people, emailing and making phone calls. And relatives were calling. I'm calling friends in New York City or emailing them. It was horrifying. And we're sitting on the sofa and I realized our dogs are often up there with us, but this was different. They had become Velcro dogs, stuck to us. Of course, they didn't know what was going on in the world. And whether it's because they were trying to console us because we needed consoling or not, I'll never know for sure, but that's sure what it seemed like the dogs were doing. And then I got an email from Chris Christensen. I did not know Chris Christensen at all. Received an email from him saying, I'm going to New York City to Ground Zero. Would you like to talk to me? Well, apparently Chris knew that he didn't know me from WGN radio from national radio I did at the time, and I still do, or from anything else that I do, nothing in the veterinary world. He knew me from Dog World magazine, which at the time I wrote for. And I talked to him and I said, yes, I'd like to know. So he gets to Ground Zero. And on and off, we're on the phone, on and off, only because the cell phone coverage was what it was. And he described the scene and how horrific it was with body parts and all this other stuff. Well, his dog named Servus, a search and rescue dog, was actually injured there. The first dog, one of the first dogs on the scene and the first dog to be injured, Servus slid down one of those mountains that we saw, debris on television, and he slid down one of those mountains of sorts, was rushed to the Animal Medical Center in New York City by human ambulance and then taken care of, but he was back out there the next day working. And I thought this is something we ought to talk about on the radio. Now, at that point in time, I was on the radio. I don't remember Saturdays or Sundays, but this was during the week. I didn't want to wait, and I called Bob Collins, and I said, do you want to do an interview here with a search and rescue dog handler? And I was a part of that, and we did. First time search and rescue dog handler was talking about what was going on, and it was hard to get anyone on the scene because of cell phone service, but also because people were busy, but Chris was happy to do that with us. As a result of that, then the morning shows, national morning shows, began to cover search and rescue dogs. I think, and it's clear, it's because of the bit that I did with Bob Collins on his show. Then I had Chris on my weekend radio show on WGN. And now days had gone by, so he was better able to describe what was really going on, good, bad, and otherwise. It was quite an emotional conversation. I wrote about it, too. It was published in Dog World, I believe. And I still remember the cover. It was Dog World, and I still remember the cover picture. I still remember the article, which my friend Beth Edelman edited. I know she remembers as well. She, in fact, was so touched that she got in touch with Chris Christensen herself. Just an amazing story that at that time brought the country together. Not much good can come out of such a story, but it did indeed bring the country together. So I hope we remember all the people lost, but also the dogs who served all of us after 9/11. Mindy Dutka is the chief storyteller of Dogs I Meet Pet Photography in Boston. And during the pandemic, you photographed, Mindy, many dogs, but you learned something as you were doing it, I understand.
I did. I did a personal project called Tales of Support. And what I learned is that dogs, or what I knew, it was a proof of my theory, that dogs are among the unsung heroes of the pandemic. They were people's salvation, and they really were a therapy dog to their humans.
And these are dogs that aren't particularly therapy dogs officially, but they provided relief to people. Can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Sure. I spoke to many different people. I put them into two camps. There's like the healthcare workers or the people that had to work during the pandemic and then the people that stayed home all the time. So I spoke to several healthcare workers and they talked about how after being out of the house for 12 hours and coming back after pretty traumatic days, that their dog was everything. That was just the light and the highlight of their day. And it just brought them, the dogs grounded them, the dogs, they spoke to the dogs, they sort of told the dogs about their day. So it was a very therapeutic and a way for them to process what had happened.
Therapeutic, it sounds cathartic in a sense as well.
Yes, exactly, very cathartic. And then the group of people who were home all the time, the dogs just, you know, also, they gave them structure. As to having to go outside and take that walk and get that time outside to clear their head. They were their companion, so they really didn't feel alone. They provided joy and comic relief.
yes.
You know, for their children, it was also, you know, they talked about a great thing because it was an excuse not just kids go outside. It was like you have to go out and walk the dog. Or people that adopted dogs during the pandemic, it gave them a job and a mission and a purpose to work on training the dog and, you know, socializing them as much as they can. So the resounding theme was that their dog was pretty much, you know, helped them through everything.
So interesting. And you're not trained in any of this. I mean, you're a photographer, but I imagine being a photographer, when you're looking through the lens, you see things in a way that we don't necessarily see?
I think that's true, Steve, you know, and I've always been fascinated by the human-animal bond, and I've always been a dog lover throughout my life, and I know what my dogs have meant to me, and I can see that when I think I do capture that in the photos, and usually I just kind of sit back and hope nobody notices me there and just click the shutter at the right moment of that expression of love, which it is inevitably always there.
Yes, it is, isn't it? But a little different right now, according to what you have to say, that all these dogs who aren't therapy dogs, but yet just by being our dog, are therapy
dogs.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. And the people that are on the dogs maybe tell their stories by the look they give, in a sense, but the people can tell you the stories, and you heard these stories.
I did, and that's why when I decided to do the project, I thought that it had to be a little bit more than just a photo essay because there was such depth, and each story was a little bit different, and I wanted to give context to it. So in addition to the photographs, I interviewed the people and, you know, wrote a summary of what their story was. But people, you know, I mean, one woman just talked about she had so much loss and death and tears, and that, like, if it wasn't for her dog, she didn't even know how she'd get through it all.
Yeah, I believe it. And was this particularly true, I mean, for everyone, but especially maybe for senior citizens?
Yes, for senior citizens, it really was. I even had somebody talk about how she was unable to see her dad, who lived close because of you know, the quarantine, and he couldn't see the dog for a while. So, you know, the dog wasn't able to provide the therapy to her dad. And once that it lifted a little bit, and, you know, the joy that her father had in just being able to spend time with the dog was tremendous.
Yeah, it's still remarkable to me after all these years what dogs can do. Mindy, what is your website?
It's dogsimeet.com.
Easy enough, dogsimeet.com. Mindy Dutka, interesting story, and I probably will have you back. I hope I have you back when you write a book, and in that book we see pictures of everything you're describing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It really was a pleasure. Thank you for asking me to join.
Dr. Natalie Marks is here to talk about the canine influenza virus. That is a very fancy way of saying dog flu. It's a concern still, isn't it?
It absolutely is, Steve. You know, in 2015, we had a huge outbreak here in Chicago, actually starting one of the practices was mine at the time. And thousands of dogs that ended up creating a really big worry around the country from pretty sick respiratory disease. And unfortunately, some dogs even died. And we've had some very recent outbreaks in L.A. and also in Florida. The problem is that many pet parents and some even in the veterinary community are just waiting for the outbreak to happen and thinking we can kind of pick up the pieces. But it just takes one dog to spread this into what we call a naive community, so a community that's not vaccinated and protected. And this disease can spread like wildfire, and it's really, really hard to get under control, as we both know.
Yeah, so this is, who do we want to vaccinate? I think they describe it as social dogs, but when I think about it, that's actually nearly every dog.
Well, it is. And I mean, social dogs definitely need it the most because they're very communal and they're being exposed to other dogs who can pass this disease.
But social dogs can be dogs just walking down the street, and that's most dogs.
Of course. And, you know, there's a lot of ways dogs are being social now, and especially in larger cities that we didn't really think of before. Going in the dog elevator in a condo building. They're being social. They may not even be going outside. Going to get a treat from the doorman that's there. You know, going to a dog cafe and sitting outside for an hour. There's a lot of different ways that dogs get exposed to other dogs, and we would consider that social behavior.
Now, you're not only protecting your dog with the vaccine, but you're, in a sense, protecting the community, or at least participating in doing so.
Yeah, I'm so glad you bring that up, because we're really talking about community immunity. So we're getting all of the, again, naive dogs, so dogs that have never had this vaccine or never seen the disease in their body. We're creating this community protection, because the more that we can protect all of the dogs in a neighborhood or city, the less likely that we're going to have any kind of major outbreak.
But simultaneously, stop, hold the presses. There's what we call Bordetella that veterinarians, you included, I presume, have been vaccinating for since you began practicing veterinary medicine.
Yeah, for those of you that aren't familiar with that term, you may be familiar with kennel cough, which is the respiratory disease that so many of us have been protecting for decades. However, we know that Bordetella in canine influenza and so many other viruses and bacteria out there are responsible for what now is considered CIRDC, or canine infectious disease respiratory complex. It's essentially this umbrella of a bunch of different causes that can cause respiratory disease in your dog. And so it's really important for us to not think of these as isolated incidents, because many of these dogs, when they're going out to the dog park, they're not just exposed to Bordetella and nothing else. They're exposed also to the potential for canine influenza. So a really great thought is to, instead of thinking of them as completely different vaccine strategies, we want to pair them up. We want to protect our dogs as much as possible from as many respiratory diseases as we can.
Also, it seems to make sense to me, and I've always said this, I mean, Bordetella is not something, or kennel cough, and those diseases, as you point out, associated with it, sure, it's something you absolutely want to protect your dog against. We've been doing that for a very long time. That doesn't kill dogs. It makes them sick. We don't want that. However, the the dog flu can kill dogs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the more recent version of dog flu, the H3N2 that came here in 2015, did have a higher mortality rate than the dog flu, the H3N8 strain, that we originally saw in the greyhound tracks in the late 2000s here. So in my mind, anytime there is a risk of mortality, a risk of death, and we have a prevention strategy like a vaccination that is really effective and safe, why are we choosing not to do that? I mean, dogs are an essential part of our family. And as a veterinarian, my job is to try to keep our dogs and cats as healthy as possible and make sure that those families have that bond with them for as long as possible. So for me, really encouraging that safe protection through vaccination guidelines, especially identifying those dogs at risk, is one of the first things that I do.
One more quick hint. I mean, in the human flu world, there are all these strains of human flu. Experts take a stab at which ones are going to be most active in a given year. In dogs, we know in America, there are only two strains. Would you recommend in general the vaccine that covers both those strains?
Yeah, absolutely. It's called a bivalent vaccine, which means it carries two strains, so the H3N2 and the original H3N8. You know, we have something out there that is incredibly tailored towards protection. And like you mentioned, Steve, where it's sort of a hodgepodge in humans, our practice, the cases that actually were sick with flu, we used some of them to help create this vaccine. So it's very targeted, very specific, very effective, and very safe.
And very good. Thank you so much, Dr. Natalie Marks.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Have you ever gone to the supermarket? Imagine this happening. Helena Alati was browsing and was going to pick out a spice. This happened in Australia, just outside Sydney. So she's in the spice aisle. They had a spice aisle at the store. And she's looking at the spices. And then she experienced what most of you would think would be a nightmare. Because suddenly the head of a 10-foot-long snake popped out of the spices with the tongue going blah, 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 furiously. Well, knowing snakes, and she happens to, she realized the tongue flicking was only meant the snake is trying to figure out, where am I? And she recognized the species instantly as a non-aggressive, non-venomous diamond python. But still 10 foot long. She says, I was in the spice aisle just looking for something to put on my chicken. And I didn't initially see it because it was curled up way back with the little jars of spices, and then it popped out. Coincidentally, Alati is a snake person. She's a trained snake catcher. They have those in Australia. She said the snake's head came in within inches of her own when it popped out. The supermarket chain called Woolworths. Now, that's the best part of the story for me. How many of you remember Woolworths? Is this associated with the same Woolworths? I have no idea. But they confirmed in a statement that a slippery and rare customer was spotted in the spice aisle. So Alati used her phone to videotape the snake very calmly. I'm going to first do this because I think it'll go viral. It did. And then I'm going to go home and get my snake wrangling equipment. And she did. So she goes home and she gets her snake wrangling equipment, comes back with a snake catcher, one of those catcher things, you know, that they use for snakes, and a big bag. And she caught the snake, put it in the big bag, and then goes out and back, walks a few feet away, and there's a forested area, lets the snake out, and the snake goes on its own, just seemingly just fine. In fact, maybe grateful not to be at the supermarket called Woolworths anymore. Woolworth. I remember Woolworth stores. I really want to know if it's the same chain somehow. I don't think so, but who knows? By the way, you can sign up, and I hope you do, for my newsletter. You can simply go to my website, that's stevedale.tv. Newsletter, absolutely free, comes out once every couple of weeks, so generally twice a month, and that's, again, stevedale.tv. Next week, we talk to you bright and early, right here, same time, same station, on WGN.